All of his stuff looked good, some probably too good because it was probably snug, but he was different in everything that he did. He locked up different. He locked up snug.
Hey, this is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to Snug Wrestling. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
Oh, how do I get my name on the bottom like you?
Oh, this is a template thing. It's like, I made it with the fucking, what is it called? Not the template, the fucking, like the layout thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how to add any more names, to be honest.
It's okay.
Dude, I'm so
I got my name up above me, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, you got it on your hat.
I got it on my hat.
Everyone knows who you are. You know? they know who Soto is. Soto from the 619 is here with me today. Thanks again for coming on the show, man.
Absolutely, man. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, dude. And we're going to be going over WrestleMania 22. This is the WrestleMania from April 2006. But first, before we get started, Soto, for the people that live under a rock that don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself, your channels, what you do, and what you're all about.
For sure. I go by Soto619. I post wrestling previews and recaps. So anytime you miss a Raw, SmackDown, or a PLE, I try to get it to you in about a minute and a half to 2 minutes. So that way you get the winners, the losers in a quick rundown. That's my biggest thing. I'm on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube, and of course other platforms. If you can find me at Soto619 or Soto619 Wrestling for the most part.
So how'd you get started like in all this like wrestling talk on the internet, the IWC?
For sure. So long story short, I've been into this for 25 plus years, right? And as a kid, I used to make videos based off of WWE.com. They would post, you know, pictures, right? I didn't have the luxury to watch, you know, PLEs like I do now. So I would view it in pictures. So I would pull all the pictures and I would pull all the music and I would just line it up with who won and who lost, trying to figure out how to make YouTube videos back in the day before, you know, it was a thing. Never uploaded anything. I just did it for the fun of it. As time progressed, a year ago, we started in 2024 at Raw Day 1. I went to the show here in San Diego. The Rock came out. That was the biggest thing. I posted it on TikTok. It blew up. And I had been talking about wanting to make content around wrestling. I just didn't know what to do. And that honestly gave me the push to say, all right, there's a community for this. And through that, I met a bunch of people and tried finding what I could post about. Started off with a little bit of reactions and finally found what I like to do. And I like to give recaps in a quick fashion because I'm busy. I'm sure everybody else is. And if you miss a show, an episode, you're like, what's the quick rundown, right? What's my quick fix? All right, cool. It also helps me remember too, because if I think what happened last Monday, what happened last Friday or the week before that, I watch my recaps just to be like, all right, this happened, this happened, this happened. All right, cool. I remember. I know what's going down.
Dan, so you've been busy then, dude. Like I saw that recently. You were you in the holy shit? No, they go by the Holy Ish podcast. I don't think they actually say the word shit, right? But you were on there too, huh?
Yeah, I was on the Holy Sh podcast. Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah, good. Those are buddies of mine too.
Of course. Good for you.
Yeah, they're cool peoples. I think I'm gonna do something with them here pretty soon. Yeah, so I've been seeing you everywhere, dude. You've been really on your grind, dude. Yeah, I had a few people like reach out to me and be like, "Hey, have you hit up Soto yet?" And I'm like, "Nah, dude, I haven't." So yeah, man. So you pretty much take up like the entire show. You put it together in like a 1-2 minute clip. And I remember talking to you a few times, and you were like, "Man, like this shit takes a long time to do. Like, I got to be here for like at least 3-4 hours to do it, man." So.
Yeah, so you're not only, you know, calculating the 2.5 to 3 hours that we're watching the show, right? Because Raw, SmackDown, depending on how long it is, and not including the Rumble, which was 4.5 hours that day, watching the show. Now I gotta edit the show, write the script, everything in quick time, get it done with it. It usually takes me about 3 to 4 hours to do all of my editing, get it out. So that's about a 7 to 8 hour night.
That's fucking wild. No, but I feel it, dude. I feel you,
Yeah.
man. I feel like I fucking spend way too much time on my computer too, dude. My wife gives me hella shit about it sometimes, but it's
Same
fun,
boat.
dude. I like to do it. It keeps me out of trouble and all that good stuff. So, yeah, more power to you, dude. I hope, you keep it up and good things come, you know?
Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you, man. I do this for the fun of it and to meet great people like you and, you know, the Holy Shit podcast and, you know, everybody else. I just love that I'm in a community.
Yeah, dude. We're out here, dude. We're out here. Are you going to Mania?
Yeah, I actually am. I'll be there for both nights and the entire weekend. So if anybody's going, hit me up.
Yeah,
I'll be there. I'm driving in because I'm obviously in San Diego. I'm driving into Vegas. I'll be there Friday. Hopefully going to SmackDown, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, hopefully going to Raw, and then coming
back.
And
they got an NXT event, too, that weekend.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with NXT. I don't really keep up with NXT too often. I'm pretty busy on Tuesdays, and, you know, I need to have my little breaks here and there.
No, is NXT on Tuesday? No, I think the NXT show is going to be that Saturday, but in the morning.
Right, no, I know what you meant.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Why I don't cover NXT overall is because
yeah.
I'm busy on Tuesdays. But yeah, I know they have their show on Saturday.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of wrestling. It's not just, you know, WWE that I want to hit up. There's going to be some GCW shows that I really am interested in. And I'm sure there's going to be some other indie shows. I really like a lot of indie wrestling. So I'm trying to get more and more into that.
Dope. That's what's up, man. Well, let's get into it, man. Let's get into WrestleMania 22.
Let's do it.
Why did specifically did you pick this pay-per-view out of all of them?
All right. I think this one is a little bit obvious, but if you guys are familiar with WrestleMania 22, it's the very first WrestleMania where Rey Mysterio became a world heavyweight champion. And I know my name is Soto619. It's pretty obvious that I go for Rey Mysterio every single time. And I was there for his Hall of Fame induction at WrestleMania 39, you know, not too far in Hollywood. So, yeah, this one as a, you know, 12-year-old boy at the time, you know, being in that kid mindset, this was my favorite time. From the Royal Rumble, the time that he won that Royal Rumble, to the time he became the World Heavyweight Champion was just, you know, the best moment for me as a kid.
So you were always a Rey Mysterio fan because he's from your hometown, I'm assuming, right?
Always, man. He's always been my favorite.
Yeah, this time, it was a crazy time. It was an important time in wrestling, and it was important for Rey Mysterio, too, because this was right after Eddie's passing.
Yeah.
Eddie Guerrero passed away in November of 2005, and Rey Mysterio won the World Heavyweight Championship, which we'll go over in a little bit. This was April 2006, so we're talking like November, December, like 5 months after Eddie Guerrero passed away. And it was one hell of a ride during this time in wrestling. So let's jump straight to it. This was in Chicago, Illinois, the Allstate Arena. But, I mean, they were saying it was in Chicago, but I think the Allstate Arena is technically not in Chicago. It's like near Chicago, but it's like in a different part of the state. But for some reason, WWE kept saying, oh, we're in Chicago, which
right.
I thought was weird. But this was a SmackDown and a Raw pay-per-view, which featured matches from both brands. A total of 11 matches. Five of those matches were championship matches. And this was also the last indoor WrestleMania. So, like, the last one that they did in the arenas before they went to stadium shows. Double main event. And over 17,000 people for this pay-per-view. And, yeah, that pretty much covers everything. Before we get into the matches, so let's get straight to it. So this was also labeled the big time.
Yes.
So it was the big time pay-per-view. So it was only right to start with Kane and the Big Show, who were the tag team champions at the time, and they faced Carlito and Chris Masters. So my first question to you about this match is, what were your thoughts about specifically Chris Masters? Because I noticed that Chris Masters, he had the entrance, he had the pyro, he had the presentation, he had the look, and I don't remember ever being like a big fan of Chris Masters. I always thought he was kind of just there, you know. But what were your thoughts about Chris Masters during this time, if any?
Well, again, this is a long time ago, but I don't remember if his gimmick for the Master Lock was before this or after this. But my biggest memory from Chris Master was the Master Lock Challenge, right? Him just annihilating people with that Master Lock Challenge. Mm-hmm. So just from him, just having that gimmick was cool. He was also a big dude, you know, and he could definitely, you know, throw down with Big Show and Kane for sure. And then Carlito at that time was a different character than he is now, right? We have a funny Carlito nowadays. Mm-hmm. He was a lot more serious and a lot more, you know, ready to get the job done. So, you know, him and Carlito, Chris Masters, were a good team back in the day. That's what I remember. Going up against Kane and Big Show, I know they put on a pretty good match. And if you don't know this, this was actually Big Show's very first win at a WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. I read something about that too while I was doing some research about this. Yeah, Big Show was another guy that, I don't know, to me, he wasn't very threatening like you would assume someone like Big Show, his size, his weight. Whenever he showed up, it was just kind of like, yeah, it was kind of, I don't know. It wasn't, I didn't really take the Big Show as serious as one should for a guy being that size. So it doesn't surprise me that this was actually Big Show's, it was his first win at WrestleMania, right?
Right.
Yeah. So not surprising at all there. Now, what did you think about the match overall? Because I noticed that Kane, he was a little bit, pretty impressive in this opening match. He was doing a lot of high flying stuff, actually. Like he did some drop kicks. He jumped off of the top rope down to the floor and he was doing some crazy things, but not the most exciting, craziest match here to start off of WrestleMania. But what did you think about it?
Yeah, I remember watching it and rewatching it, sorry, and thinking the same thing. How could they start with this tag team match for a WrestleMania? I think nowadays we have different expectations, right? To start off with something that's going to really just kick it off, right? No, it was interesting because Kane actually got the pin. He pinned Chris Masters, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. And it's funny because that's how Big Show got his first win, but he didn't actually pin anybody to get that win. You know what I mean?
Interesting. Yeah. So the Big Show, Kane, fucking super heavyweights, a great, you know, tag team or you know, really dominant tag team. They retained the world tag team titles, but according to Chris Masters, he did an interview with Fightful like about a year ago, and they talked about this. And he was saying that him and Carlito were actually supposed to win that night.
Oh, interesting.
And become tag team champions. But there was, I guess there was a lot of things going on that made them, or they decided to go with the finish. I guess it was a last minute thing. Leading up to the main, to WrestleMania, the plan was Chris Masters and Carlito. But I guess last minute they decided, well, we're going to keep the titles on Kane and Big Show because Chris Masters said the Spirit Squad was becoming a thing, I guess, at the time. So that affected their title run. And also they were going to turn Carlito babyface for some reason. I think was Carlito at the time, was he getting cheered? I think he was. Like the people were like wanting to cheer for Carlito, I think.
So, yeah.
So there was like a lot of weird things. Chris, this is coming from Chris Masters, so I'm not sure how true that is, but What a lot of what ifs. So, I mean, could you imagine Carlito and Chris Masters being tag team champions at that time? What do you think that would have been like?
Something interesting, right? I still think they could have had the Spirit Squad take it off of them, have a little short run. Could have maybe had a different storyline for why Chris Masters and Carlito weren't together, type of thing. I think they could have still done that.
I don't even remember them ever being a tag team, dude. That's the,
Really?
yeah. Until I saw it,
After.
I was like, what the fuck? That's so weird. Like, it's just a, like an odd pair, but I guess they were a good tag team if you
Different
remember them.
time,
Yeah.
different Carlito now.
Yeah, for sure, dude. But yeah, that was the opening match. The second match, though, unlike the first match, the second match was the Money in the Bank ladder match.
Now that's what they should
Ooh.
have started with. That is the match that should have
Ooh.
kicked off WrestleMania.
One of the craziest Money in the Banks. This was back when Money in the Bank was new. I think this was like the second Money in the Bank ladder match ever in
Yep.
WrestleMania.
Yeah, Edge is the one that introduced. No, no, was it? No, was it Chris Jericho or Edge? I think it was Chris Jericho that introduced the Money in the Bank idea.
Yeah, Chris Jericho takes credit for that. Yeah, I've heard about that too. But Edge, I believe, was the one that won the first one,
Yeah, the
right?
year prior, correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, this match, it would have been dope if they started off with this match, but it would have been hard for everyone else to follow this one because this match was crazy from the jump. Like, all of the competitors in this match, as soon as the match started, they went straight to pulling the craziest stuff you will ever see, even today. We had Matt Hardy, Shelton Benjamin, who was the Intercontinental Champion, Finlay, Rob Van Dam, Bobby Lashley, Ric Flair. Yeah, those guys. It was six guys. Both were from Raw and from SmackDown. And it felt like every one of these guys were potential winners. Like, you really didn't know who was going to win this one, right?
Right, absolutely. The crowd favorite at the time for me though was RVD for sure. I've always loved high flyers, and RVD's always been one of them for me, so.
Yeah, RVD was definitely one of my favorites too. Fucking Ric Flair though, man.
Dude, the way
Rick.
he just kept eating those falls, man, and he would not give up.
This was 20 years ago, and he was still really old. Like, he was, they said, I think he was like 54 during this time.
Ric
And
Flair has been old my entire life.
yeah, for real. So seeing him in this type of match was just weird to me. It was like, I don't know, this is not okay. And then we'll talk about some of the other spots. Shelton Benjamin had amazing spots with the ladders. He doesn't get enough credit for doing the high flying stuff, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't necessarily consider him a high flyer when I think about high flyers, so I think you're right, because I definitely should consider him.
Yeah, man. Just going back to that iconic super kick front with Shawn Michaels, and then the thing that he did in this match with the ladder. I posted a clip on it on
I
my
saw it.
Instagram, and I remember watching that till this day. It's still, I remember that spot. So yeah, Shelton Benjamin was crazy, and people sometimes forget how crazy he was, but he was much younger back then, so he can get away with now. I don't know if he can do that stuff. But I want to talk about the Ric Flair spot, because Ric Flair took a superplex by Matt Hardy from the ladder. And what did you think about this, like, when you were first watching it, if you remember, or when you rewatched it, what were your thoughts about that spot?
When I first watched it, I do not remember it happening. When I rewatched it, I thought that man took a huge bump, and big props to him, just for taking that bump at the time. If I'm not mistaken, he went to the back for a little bit to kind of just, I don't know, take a breather. Maybe it was for the storyline for them to be like, oh, it's down to the last five or whatnot. I don't really remember how they kind of pivoted.
Yeah, they fucking after the big superplex, both of the referees threw up the X, which you know what that means, right? The X. Yeah.
So that really hurt.
Well, yeah, when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, what the fuck? He's done. Like, I believed it. I'm like, this old man broke his back or his leg or something. They took him to the back, and then he comes back out after the match. And I'm like, oh, fuck. So even then, like, kind of reminds me of what they're doing now, you know, with the whole thing with the pile driver with Kevin Owens and, you know, the referees throwing up the X today. They were doing that back then, too. But in storyline, you know, so I think when the referees threw up the X with Ric Flair, it was part of the storyline. At least that's what I would like to, that's what I would like to think for his sake.
That's what I think so too.
Yeah. But it was still a brutal spot. Matt Hardy talked about this on his podcast a couple years ago when he said this was Ric Flair's idea and Ric Flair specifically wanted Matt Hardy to do it, and he didn't trust anyone else but Matt Hardy to do the spot. So Matt Hardy, he's, you know, he has a lot of history with these ladder matches and stuff, but I don't know if I would trust anyone fucking giving me a superplex from that high up, especially being as old as Ric Flair, man. But yeah, who ended up winning this one?
Rob Van Dam.
Yeah, after I saw that Rob Van Dam one, I was like, okay, it's all starting to come back to me now.
What did I say on your post? I said this, what is it? This Money in the Bank was one of a kind.
Oh, that's right. I didn't get it at the time.
Oh, I thought you would have gotten it.
Nah,
damn.
I didn't get it.
Now you get it. Now you
get it. Yeah, I get what you're saying now. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so Rob Van Dam was the second winner of the Money in the Bank ever.
Which led to one of the coolest cash-ins.
I don't remember, but why don't you tell us about it? Because I don't remember the cash-in.
You don't remember how he took the hold on. This one was, no, I remember the John Cena. Hold on. Give me 1 second. I'll think about it real quick. Cause I remember that it was really cool that he cashed in and took it. I think I'm blending my Edge and John Cena moment.
Oh, okay. But,
yeah. Continue on while I remember.
Well, since this is WrestleMania, it was still a tradition to do the Hall of Fame ceremony, the Hall of Fame ceremonies, even back then. Right. And so Howard Finkel, he was the announcer, and he made a weird comment. And I don't know if you picked up on this, but he said Bret Hart was supposed to be in this Hall of Fame ceremony, but he did not show up because he felt uncomfortable. And I was like, well, that's something weird to announce. Like, that kind of seemed like a jab a little bit to Bret Hart. Do you remember anything about that, or?
I do not remember anything about that. I saw a small clip about it actually today that you bring that up. But at the time, as a kid, I guess I didn't really think of anything of it. You know what I mean?
No, for sure. It kind of just goes over people's heads. And I think back then, too, people are not that invested into like the dirt sheets and anything like that like they are now.
Right.
But I did look into this. As soon as I heard that, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? So I did look into it, and this has to do a lot with the Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels match that we'll get into later on. But I guess the legend goes is that Vince McMahon wanted to involve Bret Hart into the storyline, and Bret Hart refused. He didn't want to be a part. Bret Hart agreed to be a part of the Hall of Fame and be a part of the ceremony, but he did not want to work. He was like, I don't want to be a part of no matches. I don't want to be a part of no storylines. And when Vince McMahon kept pushing, Bret Hart just said, you know, I'm just not going to go. I'm just not going to show up. So I guess, you know, Vince McMahon was a little bit bitter about that, and that's why they decided to put Bret Hart on blast like that. But I'm like, cool, this is some fucking interesting shit right here. This, you know, I like learning about shit like that.
Yeah, of course.
So we had Bret Hart that was inducted in 2006, Hall of Fame. Eddie Guerrero, obviously, because this was 5 months after he passed away in November the previous year. Mean Gene, Sensational Sherry, Tony Atlas, the Blackjacks, and a celebrity inductee, the Fridge. Who the fuck is that, dude?
I don't know. Okay. For a long time, and I think even some recently, I didn't know who a lot of these wrestlers were, right? They were inducting a lot of older people. And I would learn a little bit from here and there, right? They would do their little videos and all that stuff. And, you know, I'd watch wrestling a lot with my dad and my grandpa, and they'd be like, oh, I know that person, or I remember that person growing up. But me personally, I don't know.
Yeah, speaking of old people, I forgot to write it down, but Vern Gagne was also added to this Hall of Fame in 2006. I don't know how I missed that, but I remember because I'm like, holy shit, that's Vern Gagne. I mean, I've heard many stories about him and how he used to promote in the territories and all this stuff, but I never actually saw what he looked like until I rewatched this, you know?
Gotcha.
So that was really cool. So going back to the whole Bret Hart thing. So another thing that I found when I was doing the research is that the match between Shawn and Vince was originally supposed to be Bret versus Vince, which is another reason why Bret wanted nothing to do with that, which later on, I think they ended up doing the Bret versus Vince match, I think in 2010, right?
Later on, I remember.
Yeah. But that was supposed to happen at this WrestleMania. Obviously the plans didn't go through and it was Shawn Michaels versus Vince.
Which they put on a pretty good match.
Bret and Vince did?
I think so.
Oh man, I don't even think I watched that one.
Really?
Yeah. Dang.
We'll get to that part in the later part.
Yeah. So let's talk about the United States title match. Yeah.
My bad. I meant Shawn Michaels versus Vince.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels versus Vince. We're going to talk about that one. That match was crazy, by the way.
Yeah, that match was crazy.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that one. But the next match is the United States title match, which is Chris Benoit versus JBL. These two guys, man, one of the most hard-hitting guys that you can ever watch in the WWE. Snug, no pun intended, two snug wrestlers, Benoit and JBL. JBL was a major heel during this time because he was mocking Eddie Guerrero during the match, which is like, I don't know, do you think this was like in bad taste when you were watching this, or what did you think about that when
JBL's always been a crazy heel. When I say crazy, I mean he's always pushed the limits to it. And you know, I remember his whole immigration stuff when he was at the border. Oh, you know, remember that?
Yeah.
When he had that feud with Eddie, bro, that was intense. I know this has nothing to do with WrestleMania, but since we're talking about that one clip, I remember being in the living room watching that clip and it feeling so real. And my mom, who doesn't watch wrestling, happened to just be there watching, and she was like, "That's so fucked up." And I no, I can't watch this. And then, you know, I was like, "Damn, it's scripted, but at the same time, it feels so real." Yeah. Anyways, he does that. He's always pushed his character that way to where it just feels so real, and he's just pushing the boundaries.
Yeah. That's the type of shit that you don't forget. Like, I remember that clip that you're talking about. And I remember thinking, like, where the fuck do they find these people, these Mexican people, to agree to do something like this? Like,
probably in catering.
Yeah, right. the people that were cleaning the bathrooms or something. Nah, But yeah, I remember that, and it's kind of crazy to talk about that now with all the shit that's happening right now with ICE and things like that. But man, that shit's real, man. They fucking There's a lot of reality to the stuff that they did back then, and even today too. You won't ever see that stuff nowadays, but yeah, man, they were really fucking pulling people's strings back then. It was a crazy time. So this thing with JBL when he was mocking Eddie, man, it was crazy. Randy Orton too was another one that he was talking a whole lot of shit right after Eddie passed away.
Bro, his line was so hard when he talked about Eddie. If I'm not mistaken, Randy's the one that said that Eddie was in hell. Or if it was it was
Yeah.
Randy, right? Damn, that.
Eddie's not looking at us from up above because he's in hell or something like that.
Bro, that is another one where it's just like, oh, that one hurt. That one hurt. Eddie, going back to Eddie real quick, Eddie was the first and only wrestler I've ever cried for when he passed away. That one was hard. And then it was Bray Wyatt, but this one for sure.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I remember being really sad when that when that happened, and shortly after that, it wasn't too long after that that Chris Benoit passed away too. Or he killed himself, I should say, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what's the
That one
proper word
was
to say it.
the biggest shocker, obviously, because of everything that went down. There was a lot of emotions in that one.
Yeah, so this pay-per-view was April 2006, and Benoit died June of 2007, so it was about April, May, a year and 2 months after this match with JBL. Chris Benoit died, so it was a year and 2 months after that. But no matter what people want to or how they feel about Chris Benoit, it was a shitty thing, but he was one hell of a wrestler. I don't know if I'll still get in trouble for saying that, but this match with JBL was another perfect example of a great wrestling match, I thought. But what did you think about the match?
I don't remember too much from the match, but I just remember Chris Benoit as a wrestler, and I can agree with your statement. As far as a wrestler in ring wise, he was a great wrestler.
Yeah, for sure. Unfortunately, Chris Benoit did not get the win here. He lost the United States title versus JBL because JBL stole the win. JBL was doing his heelish things that he usually does and grabbed the ropes during the pin, and JBL walked away the new United States championship. So that was the third match of the night. And we're moving on quickly because the next match, like the ladder match, this match, I think it's safe to say it topped it.
This next match was a hardcore match, and it was between Edge, who was with Lita at the time, versus the hardcore Mick Foley. And this match, I think, is my second favorite. If you were to say wrestling wise, like the show and everything, it was probably my first favorite of the night. But because Rey Mysterio became world champion, that tops it. That's the only reason.
Yeah, I think also the Sportster, which is like a pretty big, I guess, like wrestling website or whatever, they named this match the best match of the night. So this one got number one. And I think they might be right, man, because till this day, this is probably one of the most brutal hardcore matches I have ever seen. This was a match where it was obviously that iconic flaming table spot that a lot of us will never forget. It just lives rent free in people's heads. And I'm glad that I got to go back and rewatch this and relive this whole thing because it was super, super crazy. All the stuff that they used in this match was real. The barbed wire was real, the blood was real. And these guys, they went all out. Like even Edge said it, like they both had chips on their shoulders, Edge and Mick Foley, and they wanted to steal the show, and I think they did, right?
Yeah, I remember that Edge wanted to be in the main event, and he was like, "Well, I'm going to make something so unforgettable that you're gonna think that this was the main event, and they stole the show 100%. They had thumbtacks, they had, you know, barbed wire, they had flaming tables, and I remember watching a video about it years later, but just on how bad that Mick Foley and Edge, they just burned themselves, and their hairs on their arms were just burnt off. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a crazy match, but it was so good.
They beat the fuck out of each other, dude. I felt kind of bad for Edge. I'm skipping ahead a little bit here, but like when the match ended, you can see Edge's face. His face expression says it all, dude. He was in shock.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, dude. Like his face expression was scary because he just went through hell, basically. And that shit was real, man. They lost a lot of blood, both of these guys. They set themselves on fucking fire. They hit each other with real barbed wire. And also, I found something that Edge said that they signed a waiver before the match. WWE made him sign a waiver saying they're not responsible for whatever. So this was a legit unsanctioned match, basically.
This was cool. This was like going back and looking at the history. This is a match that I would show, and it goes up there with Mick Foley versus Undertaker throwing him off the cage. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
This is definitely one of those matches that should be up there.
Oh yeah.
If you were to show a non wrestling fan, like, this is something that's really cool.
Oh yeah, for sure, dude. Ah man, I'm just kind of glad that we don't see that those types of matches anymore, man. Because it was scary, man.
Honestly, would be for it though. I'd be for another type of match like that, something crazy and just wild. It doesn't have to be all the time. It's just, you know, every once in a while.
Oh, man, you're
been 19 years, bro. 19 years since that match.
You're going to hell, dude. You're sick.
Take me to hell in a cell, and I'll see you in there.
Yeah, right. No, dude. I get like fucking scared now. I feel like if I ever see something like that again, dude, like when I was a kid, I didn't care.
Right.
As a kid, I'm like, I don't care about what these guys actually do. But now, like, I feel bad for them sometimes. So I'm like, I don't know if I can watch it. But
like WrestleMania 39, where Edge busted open Finn Balor on accident, throwing that ladder.
Yeah, but see, that it didn't look as bad.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. They weren't intentionally trying to do it, but it was real, you know?
Yeah,
and that was a big split, you know what I mean?
Like, that wasn't supposed to happen, you know? Which is different compared to, like, what Mick Foley and Edge did. Like, they were supposed to bleed. They were supposed to do all these crazy things to each other. And there was one specific spot that Edge took the barbed wire bat and swung it straight to Mick Foley's head. And, like, I could just feel it because, like, if you get hit with barbed wire, I'm pretty sure it probably gets stuck on your skin and probably rips some skin off. And, all you see is just all this blood coming down from Mick Foley's face. And I'm like, dude, you can't pay me $1 million to let some motherfucker hit me like that, you know, with a barbed wire bat. I don't know, man. It was just... This match was fucking insane, dude, to say the least.
It was a good match. It was crazy, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
What else? So yeah, we talked about that. We talked about the waiver, real barbed wire. The flaming table spot too was pretty crazy because I remember right before, maybe not right before, but a few minutes before the spot, I don't know if it was Lita or Edge actually poured some lighter fluid on Mick Foley's back. So Mick Foley had a little bit of lighter fluid on him already. Then they poured the lighter fluid on the table. They lit it on fire. And I thought Mick Foley's going to literally catch on fire because he already had lighter fluid on him from before. Luckily, that wasn't the case. Luckily, as soon as they hit the table, the flames went out, but still, fucking Ridiculous. Anything else that I'm missing about this hardcore match that you want to add?
No, I mean, I remember them talking about how they were just finding thumbtacks after the match, and it was just they had thumbtacks everywhere, from their face, their arms, everywhere that you could think of. They just
Their
had
ass
thumbtacks
crack, probably.
everywhere, bro. The freaking foot, like, I just remember them talking about their thumbtacks. So it was brutal, but it was a really good match, and their table spot with that fire was a moment to never forget. That was definitely the WrestleMania moment.
What is going on, all you Snug Wrestling listeners and followers? Thank you for being a part of the show. I just want to give a quick reminder, if you're listening to this, please be sure to leave a star rating and leave a review, as it goes a long way. It means a lot, and it's easier for other people to find the show if you leave those star ratings and leave the review. I would really, really much appreciate it if you guys did that. Also, follow us on all of the social media platforms: TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, @SnugWrestling, and don't forget to keep it snug.